How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I am just dandy, I tell ya. Dandy.
Yay!
What's going on? What's going
on? Nothing. School's back.
Look who's back. It's school.
It's school.
Look who's barely holding on. It's me.
Everybody's excited to be back. Loving it.
I wouldn't go that far. I would not go that far, sister.
My husband is still working from home, but he's in the basement, so it's kind of nice having my place
house back.
Back to myself, yeah. The house stays cleaner just a little bit longer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you could just lock them in the basement. You could just lock them in the basement.
Yeah,
you know?
They get out. They know how to use the windows now.
Oh, shoot.
You know, how's school going for you?
It's great.
Yay.
It's okay. It's a new year. It's a new dawn. We'll see.
Cool.
We'll see. Hit me back up in October and I'll let you know. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. So, yeah. It's, it's another day. It's my 13th year of teaching, so.
Yay. It's been that long already?
Eight to go till I retire.
Not that you're counting down or anything.
Not that I'm counting down. 2030 can't come soon enough. Just kidding. No, I'm not. Just kidding.
Woohoo.
No, I'm not.
What you got for us today?
I have, you know what I have.
Harpies?
I have a humdinger.
Oh.
No.
Sorry.
A humdinger.
Awesome. I can't wait.
And let me just say, there's perverts in this world.
Are there?
And then there's preverts.
Really?
This guy's a prevert. He's a whole new level. So here we go. You ready to go?
Yep. Let's go.
Lorraine Kirkley, who goes by the name Lori, lives in Valparaiso, Indiana, with her loving husband, Robert. Lori works as a cardiac rehab nurse and seemed to really like her job. The couple were madly in love, no kids yet, and they actually had just put their house up for sale as they had decided to move to South Bend because Robert just got a new job there and he was commuting, and so they figured it would be easier just to go, relocate to South Bend. Now, Lori, being a nurse, knew how important exercise was to maintain good health. Lori loved cycling so much, she was not only in the club, she was the president of it.
Wow.
The club that she belonged to was called the Crank Club, and it was a group of people who would get together and bicycle on weekends, or cycle, as Jen likes to say. For fun. You know, people do that, Jen. People actually go out exercise for fun.
That's weird, but I get it. That's where you mean by the perverts,
sweating?
Right? Yeah.
For fun? Sweating? No. It was July 21st, 1999, around 9:30 p.m., Robert came home from work. Expecting Lori to be at home, as she always was and was supposed to be, he arrived home to an empty house. Even though no one was in the home, it was apparent someone had been there, and they actually helped themselves to a few of the belongings inside. Robert walked across the street to a neighbor's house and asked if they had seen Lori. Had they seen her come home? When they told him that they had not seen her, Robert decided to call 911. Robert tells the 911 operator that his wife was not at home. The garage door was wide open, and Lori's SUV was also missing. Robert can tell just with a glance some of the items from the house are missing, and there's a strange note that was left behind. Now, there was something definitely not right about the whole situation. Detective Sergeant Jim Reed from the Porter County Sheriff's Department arrives on scene having received information that he was responding to a potential robbery and kidnapping. The missing person was Lori Kirkley. As officers pull up, Robert is outside on the lawn waiting for them. Robert informs officers that he had just got home from work and he came home to this. Investigators proceed into the Kirkley residence, and what they notice right away is a large handwritten note. The note was written in big block letters, and it was taped to a dresser inside the house. The corner of the paper had been ripped off, but you could still read it, almost like it was ripped off on purpose, and you totally understood what it meant. In all caps, 44 Magnum pointed at your head.
Oh.
Then in smaller block letters written as if the person was shaking when they wrote it. That's the best way I could describe it. It's written almost like purposely squiggly lined, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not that they were nervous. It was done on purpose. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It was purposefully written badly to throw people off. Not
exactly.
Yeah.
In smaller block letters was the phrase, down on your stomach.
Oh.
So 44 Magnum pointed at your head,
down on
your stomach.
Yeah.
There were signs of a struggle inside the home, as well as what could be blood droplets on the kitchen floor and counter. Inside the sink was a knife. It was a butter knife, and it looked like it also had blood on it. Inside the front door, on the floor, was an envelope. Inside was a typewritten note. Here's the note. Larry, they are showing the house at 3 p.m. Hopefully, they will make it a quickie. You need to get in and out quickly. The husband works late, but I'm not sure what time the wife will be home, so hurry. Get at least the computer, stereo, VCR, telescope, the bikes, jewelry, and any money lying around. Parentheses. The wife is cute. Check for lingeries. In close parentheses. Oh. Burn this letter when you are done. Do not talk over the phone about this to me. Parentheses. Only in person. Close parentheses. Sorry about the skips after the K's. And that means the letter K. But I had to use an old computer. Parentheses. Not mine. Close parentheses. Good luck, Norm Jacobs. Okay. First of all.
Signed your
the
name.
The parentheses, yeah. Dude. Seriously?
Yeah.
And the computer. So every time there was a K, there was a skip. So quickie, it would be, you know, Q-U-I-C. K, and then a space, i.e.
Right.
The typewriter computer obviously had a little issue there.
Well, thanks, Norm Jacobs.
Mm-hmm. Robert said neither he nor Lori knew a Larry or a Norm Jacobs. Police asked Robert to walk around the home with them to see if anything is missing. In the office, his computer was missing and drawers had been pulled out. In the bedroom, Lori's underwear drawer had been pulled out and was thrown all over the room. Her jewelry box was in disarray, but Robert couldn't tell what was missing at that point. In another room in the house, Robert's telescope was missing, but that was not all. Here we go. So the person that broke in this house, Jen, stole their property, kidnapped Lori, and you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Left porn, that's right, pornography, photos on the wall. They tacked or taped photos to the wall.
Of the house?
Yes. Of this room.
Really?
What?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
That's odd, right?
That's why I said he is a very, very sick person, individual, prevert, foe of the show. Officers were able to determine that Lori did report to work that day and came home at her usual time, which was right after 5 p.m. She parked in the garage and went inside. A neighbor would testify that she witnessed her leave the home sometime later, driving her car, and the neighbor would say, it seemed to me she was by herself. She didn't see anybody else in the car at that time. Now, when asked if she could add anything that maybe would be helpful, and the neighbor did have something really interesting to add. She says on the day that Lori disappeared, prior to Lori even coming home, there was a stranger, a guy, riding a bicycle up and down the street. But he was actually riding the bike back, turn around, and forth. Back, turn around, and forth. Just going, like, back and forth. Well, these two neighbors, these actually were younger kids at the time, or adolescents, I guess. They said that they did not know this man. They'd never seen him before. And they couldn't even say that they knew him being friends with Robert and Lori. So, just odd. But remember, Lori and Robert, Lori particularly, that were enthusiasts. So, perhaps he was a friend. But enough to notice that he was going up and down, back and forth, and not even talking to them. so police make a note. It turns out, as police are diving in, there was another burglary, and it was not just in the neighborhood, Jen, but it was actually in the Kirkley home in February 1999. So their house was broken into twice. In this crime, a person broke into their home, and while they took a few things, they weren't really worth any money. It was what they didn't take, or shall I say, what they would leave behind, that makes it all that much more peculiar. A book, yeah, like a scrapbook almost, was found in the home. Guess what it had in it?
Dirty pictures.
That's right. It had photos of scantily clad women. Hey, buddy, sorry about taking your stuff. Here's my porn scrapbook. Who does that? As we know and have talked about a million times on this podcast, that usually the offender is someone the victim knows. So the police need to take a look into her husband, Robert, first. Mm-hmm. Robert seems devastated, but we all know we've seen that before, and that doesn't automatically mean you're innocent, now does it? They need to prove that he was not responsible for any of this. Friends and family would tell officers that the couple were deeply in love and would never hurt each other. They were actually planning to move to South Bend, and, you know, they were getting ready to start planning to start a family.
Mm-hmm.
Planning to start a family. It kind of turns out that they seemed like a happy couple. This wasn't the dark scenario of one of them cheating or anything like that. So as time's ticking away, and with Lori still missing, they needed to hurry, refocus the investigation. Clearly, Robert was not responsible for this. He was at work. Investigators decide that they need to step back and re-examine Lori and what a bizarre crime scene this was and what it all meant. Police reach out to fellow members of the Crank Club to see if they can shed some light on the situation. A name that popped up was a man by the name of Sam Montgomery. Sam was in the Crank Club along with his wife, and everything was going great. Jen, it's all going great with Sam and his wife in the Crank Club. That is until Sam's wife decided to file for divorce and start dating another Crank Club fella. Now, we know that's not going to end well. So Sam obviously was not taking this very well, and he attempted to run over the new boyfriend.
Oh, good. Yep. That solves all your problems.
So due to this little fact, Lori, being the president of the club, had to have a little chat with Sam. Lay it out there. Sam, you know, this isn't acceptable. We can't have this. We can't have you running over your wife that you guys are divorcing. Authorities at this point thought maybe Sam was not happy with Lori because she had to speak to him and call him out on all this. But it was clear that he was angry with his wife and not Lori. It was not Sam who was driving up and down Lori's street. By the way, Sam was cleared, but Sam did offer another name, a man by the name of William Johnson. This man was also a member of the Crank Club, but he was asked to leave the club after asking a fellow biker, might want to turn this down if you got kids there, how her crotch smelt after a long bike ride, as well as making other lewd comments. So,
Charming.
He got bounced.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So police go in, they take a look at William Johnson. They locate a neighbor of William's who had stated that William had asked to provide an alibi for him should the police ask. And you know, it happens to be on the night Lori disappeared. Will, that's not looking so good for you, buddy. When police speak to William, they notice he's fidgety and definitely nervous. He tells officers that he's not seen Lori since he quit the Crank Club, which is funny because he didn't quit. He got kicked out, but okay. When pressed to provide an alibi, William cannot. Seems there is no one that can confirm his whereabouts the night Lori disappeared. With nothing else to go on and not able to hold him, William walks free. Officers are continuing to investigate. They reach out to Lori's co-workers, you know, to gauge the climate at work and see how things were there. One of Lori's co-workers, Nancy, tells investigator that Lori had mentioned that she was being bothered at work by somebody, and not bothered in like a verbal sense, or she would explain that Lori would complain that things were missing from her workspace. You know, things that could easily be explained away. A favorite pen, a notebook, you know, nothing glaringly obvious, but the kind of things that would make you think, wait, didn't I just put that there? Am I crazy? Am I imagining this? But after a while, you know, we've all been there. You're kind of like, okay, I get it. Something's not right. Police ask her when the last time she saw or spoke to Lori was, and she tells them it was an exercise class that a fellow coworker and exercise physiologist named David Malinsky taught. She mentioned that Lori seemed off that day as if something was bothering her. And the way that I kind of understood this is she had a look about her. That's what Nancy said. And it's sort of like when you and I are such good friends, like if you give me your look, or we say a lot, just look wise, right? Mm-hmm. And it's that.
Right.
So Nancy's like, I knew something was off. And it was almost like she wanted to tell me something, but didn't. But something was off that day that they took the class. Next up, investigators entertained the idea that perhaps their home was for sale. And, you know, realtors are involved in the sale of a house, obviously. It also has a lockbox on the door. So maybe they were involved somehow, or perhaps somebody that was going to come and look at the house. And that written note from Larry and Norm Jacobs indicates that it did have something to do with the house showing. Police are able to locate two brokers by the name of Larry Hitz and Norm Jacobs, and they go to interview them. They seize their computers, and it was determined that neither of the computers from their office did the skip K. Mm-hmm. Did the skip K. Both men were also able to give alibis to their whereabouts, and they were both cleared. It is ironic that the note was written concerning the house, and these two men really are realtors, brokers, but they really were cleared. They had no idea. In fact, their house, I believe, Lori and Robert's house was listed with their agency, mm-hmm. but their agency's rather large, and they didn't. I talked about this with my realtor, April Sanders, check her out, about the difference between a broker and a realtor. And really, a broker might not realize that your house is for sale. That's not what they do. So it was totally feasible that those men were not involved, and they were both cleared. Not long after that, a call comes into police pertaining to an SUV that was located by a farmer. Now, when the media, because you know they do, uh-huh. they like their stories. When the media picks up the story, Lori's coworker, David, the one that taught the exercise class, called Nancy to let her know and see if it was true, if that really was Lori's SUV, and if there had been any other news. Nancy was not at home at the time. And so instead, David spoke to Nancy's young daughter. I believe her daughter was like 13 or 14, maybe 12, very early. But this was all breaking. Camp comes on the news. You know how it does. So everybody starts calling everybody. The car, which appeared to be a Ford SUV, was sitting in a cornfield and had been burnt to a crisp. I saw a photo of it. There was nothing left. And this is where I learned something, Jen. I learned a couple things in this episode.
That's good.
I did. The SUV had the VIN number scratched out. And there were no plates on the car. A fire expert came on scene and determined that the fire was intentionally set. Now, here's one thing I learned, because I did not know this. The abductor was not that smart, as in there are several or multiple locations on your automobile in which the VIN number is located. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. I always thought there was one. So I learned something. So that even though he had scratched out that one VIN number that's usually in the windshield, mm-hmm. the other ones were easily found, and it was determined to be Lori's car. Inside the car, they located spent shell casings. Not looking good. When the news of the burning vehicle hit the media, tips start rolling in. One of those tips is rather unbelievable. But sometimes I just wonder how there's coincidences in the world. And then there's things that it's just like, how many times do we say this? It's just like the stars align mm-hmm. and everything. Dang. There's a young boy, and I can only imagine his mom is like, take out the trash, Johnny. I don't want to take out the trash. Take out the trash. They live in an apartment. He takes the trash out to the dumpster. When he gets up to the dumpster, he stumbles upon a see-through plastic bag with an envelope inside it, along with a shoe. And what would later be a set of keys. The young man picked it up as he knew this was weird, mm-hmm. and he took it home to his mom, who called police. Inside the envelope, here we have this. Please give this letter to Mr. Kirkley. His wife is missing. And Kirkley, by the way, was spelled wrong. Inside the bag, the police locate a set of keys that did belong to Lori, as well as one of her sneakers. And here's the note in full. And let me just say, for the record, I couldn't find this note anywhere. And so I had to piece together stuff to put it together. So it's a little off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Took me a while. So like I had to, whatever. But I got it. I do believe. But there could be a thing or two wrong here. But, and I apologize for that. But you get the gist of it. Here's the note. Dear Mr. Kirkley, I didn't even know her name. She came home in the process of the robbery. She would not cooperate, even with a .44 Magnum pointed at her head. When tackled and attempted to cover her mouth, she bit the tip of my finger off.
Good for
her. I never intended to hurt her. Just notice here in a minute, you're going to get this. I took her with me and we arrived at our destination. I attempted to shove a sedative down her throat, parentheses, Halson and Valium, close parentheses, so I could take her home later when she was sleeping, parentheses. The pills cause memory loss as I take them, close parentheses. I do believe she saw my face as she pulled my face mask and squeezed my groin. I attempted to give her the pills 6 times again. She would not take them even when I would bribe her by squeezing her crotch. I had no plans to kill her, but unfortunately, I had to. Her ranger ready been repossessed, and you will never find her body because we are both in another state. She did not suffer one bit. Tell the cops the case is closed. What? Yes, that's right. No need to investigate. He tells them not to.
Well, why would he? I mean, come
on. Just stop. Why even bother?
I mean, hooked on phonics obviously worked for him. And there's like, yeah.
I love how this guy, he just gives Halcyon and Valium because I take them. They cause memory, like he's giving extra information in parentheses. I love that.
Yeah, he's a crappy criminal, but that's good. We like that.
We do. Detectives now believe this kidnapper has to be someone Lori knew and that they are trying to throw the investigation, so they decide to start back at the beginning. They bring Robert in again and ask him to submit to a polygraph exam, which he does. Robert fails the exam. But here's the thing. It was already determined that Robert was at work during this time, and he could not have been the one that did this. Robert was positively ruled out as being a suspect for the kidnapping of his wife. Now, here's my plug. Polygraphs, Jen, as we know, can't be considered during a trial. And for a great podcast episode of a man who was not only highly knowledgeable about polygraphs and why they are not only not valid, he actually went to prison for teaching people how to beat them. The man, whose name is Doug Williams, has since passed. But this is a very interesting listen for those of you who would like to know more about the polygraph. And actually, it will cause you to think about the polygraph differently. It is a podcast called Pretend by our friend.
The Concerned Citizen. No, Javier.
Pretend. Javier Leiva. It's a two-part episode entitled The Lie Detector. I was totally enthralled. For instance, you know, they do target questions. So I'd say, is your name Jen? Yes. Do you do a podcast? Yes. Did you kill Cam? Right. So they do target whatever to kind of give you that balance. Well, the way that this guy tells you is to do it the opposite. And that's how you beat it. And so the questions that are supposed to be like, is your name Jen? You'd be like, no. And you think of the worst thing you could possibly think of so that your heart races. So that when you get the regular questions, it's amazing. It's totally interesting. And he really did go to jail for 5 years because the FBI kept saying, knock it off. Quit trying to get people to beat the polygraph. Stop it. And he's like, I'm not shutting up. I'll never shut up. But anyway, Javier had a great interview with him. He does say a lot of cuss words. And I just imagine this big, gray-haired, chunky, foul-mouthed guy. So that's what I envision. Anyway, check it out.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Back to the story. Again, that's called Pretend. The two-part episode is entitled The Lie Detector. And I really do love his podcast. I listen to it. I learned all kinds of stuff. Learned about how hard it is to disappear and what you got to do.
Javier's on a TV show now. I forgot what it's called. But he's actually got a TV deal.
Back to the story. Sometimes, Jen, things have a funny way of working. A woman walks into the police station and strangely enough, Detective Reed knows this woman. She happens to be the swim coach of one of his children. She proceeds to tell Detective Reed that she thinks she knows who did the first burglary of the Kirkley home. You see, she found some of those missing items in her home. And the person she thinks committed that crime was none other than her husband. Could you imagine?
Ugh, no, that's horrible.
I don't have any words for this. Investigators race to the house with a warrant in hand, and they comb through the house, and they find nothing. Not one single thing. That's right. Not one single thing that would link her husband to this crime, to the Lori Kirkley disappearance and or robbery, which is looking more and more like murder. So fast forward, this is what else I learned. And actually, I texted our friend Glenn because I was like, it was the middle of the day. And I was like, I have no idea what this is. And so now I do. So it was a little while later, just a couple days, and an officer, police officer that lived in the neighborhood was out and about, and he was going out for a little jog. Again, people do this for fun, whatever. Okay. And while he decides to take a little jog past this residence, this house that the police had just searched a few days earlier, he's kind of struck by something. So he goes back and he runs back past the house and he's like, huh, that's interesting. Something was off. Something off about the house and the search. You ready? The pitch of the roof versus where they had searched. Say what? That's what I learned, pitch. And if people probably know this, and I'm the only person in the whole wide world that doesn't know this. So, like I said before, I always learn something new in each and every episode because I like to learn stuff too. A pitch is in regards to the home's roof. So the pitch would be the angle and things like that. Basically, the officer was looking at the house thinking, I was in there. I was in that house. Why is there a little bit of like a room, a little area that comes off the house that we didn't see? Do you see what I'm saying? Goes back, tells them, hey, something's amiss here. Something's not right with this house. Investigators get a warrant. They go inside. And there it is, Jen, a secret room complete with a secret entrance. Once they get inside, well, guess what they're greeted by? Taped to the wall, all over the wall.
Porn.
Pornographic images of girls, of women, all over the wall, just like the crime scenes. That's it. This is it. Police now have a suspect. And as they thought, he was no stranger to Lori at all. He is David Malinsky, the same David that worked with Lori as an exercise physiologist, the one that taught the class she took the day that her friend Nancy said something was weird about Lori. David was brought in for questioning. David admits that he was the one that did, in fact, commit the first burglary. Now, here's where it gets weird, or should I say weirder. I'm telling you. David tells officers that he and Lori were having an affair, and he broke in their home to make it look like Lori was cheating on him, meaning Robert, right? He claims that they, Lori and David, had been having an affair for about 6 months. And while Lori was in it all the way, it was full on emotional, physical affair. She loved him. For him, it was purely sexual. So David goes on to say that it was he, along with Lori, that committed both of these burglaries so that when the big one happened, Lori being kidnapped, it would all make sense. Lori and David claims that he and Lori were going to run off together. But when the time came, he realized he loved his wife. He just couldn't do it. Now let's reverse the record on that. Right?
What?
So David claims that he broke into their house to make Robert know that Lori was having an affair on him, right? So that Robert would kind of notice that and think, huh, okay, she just doesn't love me. So that when they ran off together to be in love, right, Robert would be like, oh, it's okay. She just left me with David. See what I'm saying? He had this all planned up. Okay, buddy. But I guess he didn't think about it too good because why did Lori, who'd Lori run off with then? David.
Exactly.
David then tells officers that this caused a big fight between the two of them, between Lori and David, and that because of this, she decided to just leave on her own. During the course of the interview, detectives noticed a bandage on his right middle finger. They asked him to remove the bandage, and the wound looked very similar to, I don't know, teeth marks, like a bite. When asked if he knew what happened to Lori or if he hurt her, he said no. David is arrested and charged with the two burglaries, but they need more, or he may walk forever. Investigators decide at this point they're going to make a bold move. They're going to just go ahead and charge David Malinsky for the murder without actually having a body. Now, this is done before. Sometimes it's not as successful, but it can be done. As investigators are building their case, David does what many in jail do. I don't even know what to say. And that is share a bit of information with their new best friends, their cellies or their cellmate. So David tells his little two besties, his two new cellmates, that he would be friends forever because everybody trusts thieves, right?
Mm-hmm.
No honor among thieves.
None.
David tells them, or more likely, he was bragging about some photographs he had hidden out in the woods. And that if police ever find these photographs, well, he's going to be in huge trouble. I bet you can guess what that cellmate did with that information. And if you guess ran straight to the police as fast as he could, you're going to be a winner, Jen.
Ding, 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 ding. Yep, you know that's going to happen. Come on.
Police go to the site where David had told his cellmates that he had hidden them. They were collected and it was determined, this is heartbreaking, it was determined that the woman in the photos was Lori Kirkley. The photos contained images of Lori being sexually assaulted within a bedroom. In fact, I believe it was the master bedroom, the one he shared with his wife of the Malinsky home. Could you imagine?
No, that's horrible.
You're married.
I know.
And this man that you're married to, that you think you know, not only murders somebody, but he brings them to your bed, your marital bed, and does this stuff? Well, it's about to get worse. Detectives needed to prove one thing, and that was, is Lori alive or is she dead in those photos? Because right then and there, you know, taking him to trial for murder would be a lot easier. Even though they don't have a body, they could prove that he was dead. A pathologist was brought in to examine the photos, and he determined that he believed Lori Kirkley was dead in the pictures.
While she was being molested, she was dead?
I believe so. That's what they're implying. Even without the recovery of Lori Kirkley's remains, David Malinsky is put on trial for her murder just 6 months after she went missing on January 24th, 2000. During the trial, prosecutors brought in a supervisor of Lori's who testified that David was jealous of Lori because she had been given a promotion and he was turned down for that same promotion. Also, a neighbor testified that David Malinsky was the one that was riding his bike back and forth on the street the day she disappeared. Detectives were able to put the case together, claiming that David left his pickup truck nearby at a gas station that fateful day. He hopped on his bicycle and he rode to Lori's house. David had swiped the garage door opener and was able to get inside and wait for Lori. Once Lori arrives home, he restrains her and forces her inside her own car. He put his bike in the car as well. Can you believe that?
No, that... all because of a promotion? I can't fathom that.
I think he was a pervert. I think he had feelings for her or something. I don't know. I'm not even sure.
Well, there's kinks, and then there's killing somebody.
So when that neighbor said that she saw Lori leaving, I'm guessing, because I couldn't quite figure this out, but I guess if he had a gun or something, you were going to do what they ask, but I just don't know if I would. Who knows what you're going to do? But I believe what he did is he forced her into the car to drive herself and him, he's hiding in the car, over to his house where he's going to commit these horrible, horrible acts on Lori. On March 16th, 2000, even without a body, David Malinsky is found guilty of murder and he is sentenced to 155 years in prison. Now, mind you, this is March 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Lori's body had not been found. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Finally, on September 19th, 2005, so it's almost 6 years later, David Malinsky would accompany police to his father's rural property where he pointed out where he buried Lori Kirkley. Her body was found wrapped in black plastic. An autopsy would determine her cause of death to be strangulation. Finally, after all these years, Lori Kirkley was found and brought home to her loved ones.
I can't.
His wife? I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine that, like I said, to be married to somebody who commits such a heinous act, but then you find out
that you've been sleeping in the bed that he committed the act on. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so
it's skeezy. I mean, is it like the
you would burn that understand. Bed. You would have to burn that mattress.
Burn the bed, fucking burn house, the house down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could. He's got a secret room up there. Who knows? And I was like, gross. I was like all pink carpeted and pink. I don't know. Weird. Weird. And just who breaks into the house to leave porn? Who does that? That's just weird. Like, I think it's...
Throw people off, maybe?
I think, speaking of kinks, I think he probably got some weird thing out of it, knowing that he'd left that and they were looking at it.
Well, and see, me thinking tape would get your fingerprints on it. Like, could they get fingerprints off tape?
I'm sure he wore gloves, but
I don't know. He doesn't seem very smart.
Well, he's not. And, like, she was young, and she was a nurse, and she was caring, and they, you know, she was really in love, and they were going to have a family, and shame on him.
34 years old.
I struggle with the death penalty, but sometimes I don't know. I would have a problem knowing.
I'm thinking there's some people that just can't be fixed. They're broken. There's something off.
Here's my porn. Hey, I'm sorry I took your telescope. Here's my porn scrapbook. What?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the story of Lori. And she was a missing person for a long time because they didn't have a body. But when they did find the photos, it was determined that she was dead in those photos when he was abusing her, or assaulting her, raping her. And so obviously she was murdered. And so that's what they went with. So
that whole necrophilia thing is just a different level of that. Yeah, no,
I don't know.
Blah. Skeezy. Anyway, great story. Well, not, you know what I always feel that was very interesting. Shocking.
I'm glad they got him.
I am too. I'm glad Lori's family can have closure of knowing at least half her body to.
Mm-hmm. And just that could have went so differently. Like the cop driving by or jogging by. And noticing that something's, I don't know, like my mind doesn't even work like that. Mm-hmm. But I guess if you're an investigator and you were in that house conducting that search and you're like, wait a minute, why is this, the pitch of the roof does not indicate the inside.
Right. So, well, you know, in St. Louis, we have a lot of great things for kids to do. And one of the places is called the Magic House. And there's that situation too. There's a window there that doesn't belong to any place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. On the outside, you see the window, but on the inside, you can't get to where that is.
Well, there's a secret room.
Yeah, exactly.
That they discovered when they remodeled in, like, the 90s.
Exactly.
So but
that's
it's
mm-hmm. the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, for, and how long? That was, mm-hmm. I think it opened in the 80s for us, and they didn't even, no one noticed that, and they were working in there every day. Yeah, it's.
Not weird.
It happens. Very good. Anyway, I wanted to say our friend Javier, his TV show is called Citizen PI. It's a 6-part investigation series, and it's on Investigation Plus or Discovery Plus.
His whole podcast is really about people pretending to be something they're not. And I love it. I have a few podcasts that I do not miss an episode of. His is one of them. It just, I call it the teacher or the C-minus student, high school student in me. Mm-hmm. But I love learning new stuff. And I'm always like, huh. For instance, the guy that disappeared. This was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
The sense that nothing is held in his name. He only carries cash. Mm-hmm. He has no social media at all. Like the house that they own is in his wife's name. Nothing is in his name. The car is in his kid's name or whatever. And all this extreme, but you cannot find this guy. You cannot find him. Like, he can't be located. And so he went into all that, like, what you have to do if you really want to disappear, if you do not want your footprint out there. And I don't know. I was just totally, it was really fascinating. I think it was Javier did an experiment about, he's like, I can find you. And I can't remember if it was Javier or somebody else. So he goes, okay, give me the state and the city. So he's like, okay, Dallas, Texas, for instance. This isn't exactly right, but you're going to get the gist. Javier was staying in a hotel, right, when he was interviewing him or whatever. Uh-huh. So he goes, don't tell me which hotel it is. I'm going to find you. And he goes, I bet you I can find you in just a few phone calls. And so he calls, I think it was 3 hotels. And he said, hi, you know, I have a delivery here for Javier. It's flowers and food. They're going to go bad. I think he's in this hotel or maybe it's the one across the street. And he did. He found him. And he's like, people give away so much information. And I was like, that is scary.
It's very
scary.
Legit,
you know, I don't know. It was interesting. So check out
Pretend. And I just looked it up. The episode that you're talking about with the lie detector was March 16th of this year, 2021.
Yeah.
So, and then it's the other one is
March 30th of 2021. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. But yeah, Javier's great. I love him. Very nice man. Yeah. And I haven't listened to his podcast in a while. I need to get back to listen to it. I haven't really listened to a lot of podcasts in a while, to be quite honest. So I got off of that track and I need to go back on it because it's good.
I do. But like I said, I have my handful of ones I won't miss.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you know how it is. Like you feel like you kind of know them and things after you've listened to them for a while, because unlike us, they're professional, but you kind of get into what they're doing and you kind of like the references that they have made before and things like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas us, you're just like, oh,
the tire fire.
Simple, dim-witted white girls who started a podcast. They're cute, right?
Little simpletons.
But we try. We try.
We've got personality. It might not fit everybody.
Sometimes I have to rein it in a lot. Like sometimes I'm thinking things and I'm just like, oh, Camille, do not say it. Do not. And okay.
Oh, you know I'm reining stuff in.
Girl, you need to rein it in sometimes. But I'm just making dumb jokes at people's expenses, like their names are funny or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still not okay. You can't do that during when we're supposed to be all professional, but I can't help it. Sometimes I just laugh. For instance, I was at the dentist the other day, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible, and I'll never admit it to anybody but you and all these listeners. But I had a new dental hygienist, and every time she was talking to me, all I wanted to do was say, that's what she said. Oh. Because everything she was saying, that's all I kept thinking. So for instance,
well, good
she
thing
said,
your mouth was busy then, right?
Well, I was just like, oh, Camille, stop that. Like, how old are you? But again, I'm a high school teacher. So it's okay to swallow.
So that's what she said.
What
yeah.
She said, boy, that tongue just keeps getting in the way.
Yeah.
I can't make this up. And so like, I was like, in my head, I was playing a game. I was like, if I would be a dental hygienist to purposely say these phrases on purpose to make that phrase go. Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand.
Not very professional. I am professional in my classroom for the most part.
For the most part. But you're with kids. And so that aspect drags you down
to
a little bit.
Immature.
Yeah,
I do. Never inappropriate, but immature, yes. Like sometimes, one time I did have this kid, and then I'll shut up. And this was one of my funniest. It made me laugh. So he fell asleep in class. And I was like, okay, hey, you guys, let's do a trick. So I turned out the light and the whole class came out into the hallway, right? We went and changed the clock so that it looked like it was 3:30. We get out of school at 2:20. And I go back in and I'm like, Matt, oh my God, I had a meeting. I'm sorry. It's 3:30. And he freaked out because he was asleep. It was like 1:30. It was whatever. But it's good times
let
for me,
sleep.
Let me tell you.
Hey, he's the one sleeping in class. He gets it. I think it's funny, personally. He didn't hurt him.
Laughed, except for the one kid out in the hallway was giggling, peeking through the door. I'm like, you ruined it. So he didn't believe it for very long, but he believed it for a second.
That's all that matters, so, yeah. Right?
That's right. Just a little humor. My day.
So have you been watching anything at all?
Of course. Let me just tell you, maybe it's what's going on in the world and life or whatever. But I watched the movie Captain Fantastic. Have you seen that? I cried. I never cry in movies. It was so...
Did I see that?
It was not... I'd heard of it. I just assumed it was like a Superman thing. No, it was not at all. Viggo Mortensen was in it, and he and his wife had kids and were raising them off the grid.
Yes, I've seen it. I just had to pull it up. Yeah.
And the mom died. Yeah. I was like heartbroken.
It's good.
It's
a good movie.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is amazing.
Well, so, funny, my husband watches movies all the time, and I can only do so much because I have ADHD and I can't concentrate. But he had turned it on, so I wasn't paying any attention, and things started to happen, and I was drawn into it. It's a really good movie. Yes, it's
very... And then
this
one, I'm just going to say it right now, and I'm going to say it loud and proud. I have a girl crush on Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, I love her. She's so funny.
I watched
Isn't
Girls
she?
Trip this morning. I love her so much. So I watched Girls Trip, which I literally laughed out loud twice. It was 6:30 in the morning because I woke up at 5:30. Don't judge me. Whatever. But she cracks me up. However, let me just say, and I got to find it, one of the funniest things I've ever seen with her. I was laughing so hard. And I think it was a prank show, but I can't remember. I need to find it. But she pretended to be an escaped convict. So she's all in orange. And... I have never laughed so hard in my life. It was because she was like out on the street. And she, oh, you look like, oh, you know, I've been in prison 20 years. It was the funniest just the way she delivered stuff. I love her so much. I can't even. I love it. She's just funny.
And what's that called again? What one's that?
Well, the movie I watched today was Girls Trip, but I can't remember.
I'm
going to find it and send it to you because just the way she does it and like these people, she's like, hey, where are you going? You know, she's like asking somebody and she's in Blaze Orange. Like you can tell she escaped and she goes, she's like hitting up people for rides and they're like, I think it's a prank show. I got to find it. It is seriously, I was crying laughing because she was just so funny at it.
I think she's funny. Wasn't she nominated for, was it an Oscar? A couple years ago, or she was not nominated for something, and it landed her on Saturday Night Live. And so I watched that in her monologue. She was just hilarious.
She's funny.
Just her delivery is fantastic.
Yes, the way she, hilarious. Love it. So Girls Trip, I thought was pretty cute. I'd never seen it. It came out in 2017. They go to New Orleans, but it's just funny. It's like it's a chick flick, but it's cute. I thought it was super cute.
Kind of stuff. Yeah, I haven't watched anything. I did just buy a new book that I'm excited to read. It's supposed to be really scary. It's called The Twisted Ones by T. Kingfisher. I'm going to start that today after we get done with this. Kind of chill. Been having really bad headaches the past week. I mean, I always get headaches, but this week has been something. So I'm just going to chill. And then I'll get started doing more scripts. So yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. All right, girl. But until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Lorraine Kirkley, who goes by the name Lori, lives in Valparaiso. I said that right.
Valparaiso, California.
It's Indiana, honey.
Sorry.
Lori loved cycling so much, she was not only in the club, she was the president of it.
Wow.
Now, that's a St. Louis joke on the Hans Wyman Hair Club for men. If you know, you know.
Isn't Hans Wyman across the nation?
I don't know. Maybe.
It might
but
be.
But if not... I'm not only a client, I'm not only a president, I'm a client. Whatever. All right. Well, I'm not going to tell you about that bike-a-thon that our friend Christy made me do. And I,
I know about that.
Proud to say. I came in last. That's right, last. And I don't mean by like an hour. I mean, they sent the number one guy that came in first back down the trail to see if I was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, I'm okay. I just can't slow down and I can't get off the bike because I'll collapse. Oh, boy. Okay. It's a terrible story.
That.
It's true story.